Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, I'll do this. My part. I forgot to do my part. The welcome. Come on, Dave. Welcome to Really with Tom and Dave. I am Dave Foley. Which we didn't, we figured it was more casual just to say our first names. And of course, Tom Wheeler, is the full name of Tom from the title.
That's my full, there's, yes, Tom. My given and my whatever else that's called. What is this called?
Surname. Look, so it's given, your given name and your surname, or your Christian name is the other term, right? For your,
yes,
first name, they call that your Christian name.
Okay.
You know,
I thought it was like a, I think it's a trade name.
Trade name?
Wheeler. I mean, a Wheeler would it, right? I mean, wouldn't that have been someone who
made like a wheelwright, someone who makes wheels?
I have to, yeah, assume. And there was a, yeah, lot of them. They're all over the place.
I know Coopers make barrels.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Coopers,
yeah,
make barrels.
And I know Foley's make mistakes.
I thought they did VO in the background of. Yeah, but
yes,
shows.
They do a lot of footsteps, a lot of
to coconuts and
creakly paper to make fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
fascinating. Yeah. We someday we'll do a whole pod on riffing on our names, mm-hmm, which, given, you know, they're not really that exotic.
No,
hats off to us
for the young people there. They're freaky.
Yeah, it's true. But look, we got a lot going on tonight.
We do.
Today, tonight, this morning, this afternoon, yeah, wherever you're listening and enjoying your Really podcast. And also everything else, Instagram, Really _podcast_official. Participate. Let us know what you think of our reels, yeah, and everything. And everywhere where fine podcasts are listened to. Yeah.
Follow us on your stock ticker, on your or on your old teletype machine.
Yes. Yes. If you have one of those.
Yes.
Those old Halloween-y radios.
Yeah.
You know, that with Vincent Price on them. Or, and speaking of which, it's our Halloween episode, Dave.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're gearing up for the festival. Not that we're not going to give out candy.
No, because you got in trouble for that, right?
Going to embrace the season. Mm-hmm. With a Halloween episode, we're going to talk some spooky stuff.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk some ghosts. We got a good ghost story for you. That, yep, is also, that will be provided by a wonderful guest, good,
yes,
friend of both of ours.
Yes.
Fabulously busy individual. I'm just going to run you through some of what Jeff Russo has been up to. Jeff is an Emmy Award winning and Grammy nominated composer, scoring varied and compelling music for film, television, and video games. He just received 2 Emmy nominations this year. Go Jeff, one for his score of FX Network's Emmy Award-winning, Golden Globe-winning series Fargo, soon to have Mr. Dave Foley on it, for which Jeff won an Emmy in 2016 and earned 2 additional nominations, the second for HBO Max's Oslo, which he co-composed with Zoe Keating. Jeff also received a BAFTA nomination for Best Music for Annapurna Interactive's video game What Remains of Edith Finch. His film credits include Bartlett Shear's Oslo with Ruth Wilson and Andrew Scott, Lorelei, which premiered at 2020 Tribeca Film Festival, Noah Hawley's Lucy in the Sky, Craig Massanelli's Lizzie with Chloe Sevigny and Kristen Stewart, Peter Berg's action thriller Mile 22 with Mark Wahlberg, many more. And then in TV, my lord, CBS's Clarice, he's doing the music for Star Trek Picard with the ageless Patrick Stewart, and Star Trek Discovery, FX's Fargo, as we mentioned, Legion, Apple TV's For All Mankind, Umbrella Academy, and my personal favorite, Cursed, also with Netflix and with Catherine Langford. And we'll talk about that a bit today. But then addition is that if that's not enough to composing music for film and television, he's also a founding member, lead guitarist, and co-songwriter of two-time Grammy-nominated multi-platinum selling rock band Tonic. Their debut album, Lemon Parade, posted three singles in the U.S. mainstream rock and charts top 10 with If You Could Only See Me. I'll sing the whole thing later. But that, If You Could Only See, rocketed to number one. And in 2003, the band received two Grammy nominations, one for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal for Take Me As I Am and one for Best Rock Album. Let's listen to a little of Jeff Russo's fabulous music from Fargo. Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. There he is.
Very. Oh, you don't look as moody as your music.
Yeah. I'm in a good mood.
There you go. We should be with all that cool shit going on.
Man, you just kept reading.
I was like, I'm going all the way, and I didn't even get to half of it. It's what can I say, man? You're a busy fellow. You're doing, some wonderful stuff.
I'm extremely, extremely fortunate to be able to just continue to make some music.
I think you scored the music that was in my head as I was on a walk earlier today. I think I owe you some royalties.
Yeah, his agent's gonna actually call you about that. Thing.
No,
Jeff, this is just a hangout session because we've been friends for years. Our family's been friends for years. Our daughters are besties, even though they're now at different schools. Ivy, one of my favorite human beings. Charlie, too. He's just a great family. Give my hugs and love to everybody, Nina and all them.
I will. They all know I'm here right now.
Good, good. We'll hope they tune in.
I don't know your kids. I'm going to assume they're nice.
Actually, you know, it's very funny, Dave. You've actually met my daughter.
Oh, did I?
We were, I don't remember, it was at a Christmas party or some other party that you were at, and maybe it was at...
Was it at our house?
It might have been at your house.
That would make sense.
It could have been at Andrew Reich's house.
Now I'm jealous of Andrew Reich.
Maybe. I don't remember what it was, but I remember, like, there were the two of you, and I forgot to mention when we were having dinner in Calgary. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention that, but in fact, you might actually know at least one of my.
No. Well, that's good. Now I feel more like I'm a.
You're
part
more
of
in the family, yeah, you're, yeah, and they're both good kids. Yes, they.
I probably had my daughter there too. So
it may mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah. We all have excellent daughters on this podcast.
Yeah.
Tell me something. About so this podcast, which this was a surprise to me when you texted me last week. It was a surprise to me. And then you said, oh, me and Dave Foley. I was like, wait, this is just weird. That
what's happening?
Yeah. What's happening right now? I think we just had dinner not too long ago. And now you're saying do a podcast. So
we're stalking you, Jeff.
Other than what we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has turned into mostly a UFO podcast.
Yeah, and who asked the questions around here? Yes, Dave dragged me into this mess. Actually, I kind of dragged
him. Well, he dragged me into the podcast. I dragged you into the world of UFOs.
That's true.
Now it's all out, right? Like there are pictures and the US government are like, "Yes, there's UFOs." And
yep, well they've admitted since 2017 UFOs are real. But they keep making statements. We have no evidence that they're of extraterrestrial origin. We just know they aren't from any country on Earth,
right?
But don't worry, they're not extraterrestrial.
They're not alien.
They're not us or Russia or China or Latvia or Ireland. They go through the entire atlas.
And Dave was, I was always sort of, you know, curious and like interested in the topic. I had not been quite keeping up with what are sort of jaw dropping developments in the whole thing. And then Dave was meeting all these like crazy people inside the government and this and that, and this expert here and that. And I was like, I was gobsmacked by what was happening and wanted a chance to hang out with Dave and talk to interesting folks. And this is our Halloween episode. So we're going to pivot. The little ghost pivot, but also talk some music too, because you're just doing a lot of stuff, man. Like this, first of all, we work together on Cursed. Netflix is our Lady of the Lake fantasy series. We love her, our dear Nimue,
which everyone should watch if they have.
Which everyone, yeah, still there on Netflix. Let's go, come on, guys.
In fact, stop watching this.
Start watching Cursed.
But it was, I have to say, the moment that for me, like as the kind of writer, producer, go to the orchestration, that whole room, like all the, it's sort of like putting the roof on the barn. It's just it's just such a moment of fulfillment and energy. And it's so cool. And it's such an important part of the storytelling process. Is that your favorite part of the process? What's your favorite part of the process?
I would say yes. My favorite part of the process is when we get a bunch of people in a room to play the score that I've written and they all play it. And then it becomes something greater than it could have ever become without all those people, you know, coming together to do it. You know, it's one thing when I sit down and write something on a piano and my computer, or whatever, and mock it up and make it sound, you know, vaguely like there's a lot of people playing. But once you get a number of people all sort of doing the same thing in a room, it becomes greater than the sum of its parts, for lack of a better way to put that. And that's my favorite part. My favorite part is because I usually conduct my own scores. Now, I was only able to do that a couple of times with Cursed, simply because we were in the middle of the pandemic at the beginning of the pandemic, which was like,
Don't put
anybody in the same room. They weren't so much like that in Nashville, which is where we recorded most of that score. Nashville.
We were at Warner Brothers probably for the first first one or two, I think.
I was gonna say, and I think at that point in the pandemic, you still had to spray the entire string section with alcohol.
There were big sheets of plastic in between people. It was pretty nuts. But that's my favorite part, like getting up and conducting it. Like once I've written it, you know, and gotten through the point of, you know, doing all the notes and getting it perfectly to picture, and like then we go and play it. That's the fun part.
I once did get to go in. John Lasseter invited me down to hear Randy Newman conducting the orchestra for the Monsters University score.
Yes,
so I got to go into the Sony
The scoring stage,
orchestra stage. Yeah,
it's Barbra Streisand, the Barbra Streisand scoring stage.
And she takes admission at the door. Yeah, she's there.
That would not surprise me.
Yeah,
didn't know that.
Yeah, it's nice to meet her, but it's really expensive. But got to watch. And John, of course, dragged me. He said, "Come on." And we had to stand right in the middle of the orchestra. And
yeah, it was pretty incredible.
It's amazing. It was an amazing experience. Yeah, I loved it.
I mean, Randy Newman, who is incredible, his music is incredible, and I've always been a huge fan of his for a very, very long time, but to see him do an orchestral score is a whole different type of thing. It's really great.
And you get to hear, if you're actually in the room, you can hear everyone grumbling about all the key changes and time signature changes.
B flat, come on.
yeah
Walk us through the process a little bit, because it's not like the music just sort of shows up. I mean, it goes early. I mean, I find it sort of fascinating because it starts out with, we'll talk like themes, right? I mean, it's, we'll talk character themes or a main theme and start to, where, and then in between you get all the fun, you know, notes from the studio, notes from the network, and notes from show, right? And then that, a little that. What, how do you start with theme? I mean, are you looking at the actor? Do you have footage even? I mean, what are you working with at that stage?
It really depends project to project. Every filmmaker is different. And, you know, how you and I worked together was different and is different from how I work with Noah, for instance, on Fargo. Meaning like, when do I start the process? When do I really start writing themes, and what do I need to really sort of kick off from? Mainly I'd start from a script. Sometimes I start from a first editor's assembly, or I just start watching dailies to get an idea as to how things are feeling. And then I literally sit around and throw a ball against a wall and like sit next to a piano until something sort of happens. I mean, I imagine a lot of that initial thing is the same for any writer, as you just sort of, you have maybe an idea and you sit down and then something starts to happen and then you just start writing. I'm using, this is the universal sign for writing, even though
we know what you're saying. That made sense to me.
To me, I always feel like as a non-musician, but someone who loves music, I feel like there's something magical and almost to the point of almost demonic, I think. This handful of notes, and every melody in the world is built on this handful of notes, and like the fact that you can still come up with something original and come up with a new melody seems like it's mathematically impossible.
Well, I mean, actually, some mathematician did the calculation. There is a finite number, right? It's not infinite.
So we might run out.
Well, you don't run out. You just use something that people don't remember, right? Every melody, I think, probably has been done to some degree or another. And it's just how you present the melody that's infinite, right? How it's presented, in what form it's presented in, what instrumentation, what, you know, what dynamic something is playing in, you know, strangely enough, like, so for this last season of Fargo, for instance, you know,
I hear it's fantastic.
Have you been watching Dave nonstop for like months
of
now?
Of course. I just finished the last episode. I know everything that happens, and I'm not going to say anything because it's going to come out soon. In any case, so I wrote a couple of themes. Particularly, there's a theme for your character, and there are themes for a number of different characters. So I usually write themes on a piano or on a oboe or whatever, and it plays melodically. But now I transpose that onto kettle drums, and all of a sudden you have a completely different, even though the kettle drums are playing the same notes and the same rhythmic pattern as the oboe, when you're playing it on the drum, it's a totally different piece of music. So it's really all about how you take any melodic content, any thematic content, and how you present it and what you present it with. And that can be done in an almost infinite way. So, you know, every show and every movie and every video game, they all have a different tonality, a whole different way of telling the story. With Cursed, it was, you know, a very unique way to tell this story of the Lady of the Lake, which I found to be quite engaging for me to be able to write melodic music that was emotional and yet sort of swashbuckling at the same time, because we had that sort of adventure thing happening. And I started writing based on Nimue. You know, her character was what I sort of jumped off of. I just always need that little bit of something to, so when I'm sitting there throwing the tennis ball against the wall, I go, ba-ding, that'll work. And then
it's so interesting. I mean, her initial, like that initial theme, you know, so haunting, really just evocative, like emotional, but like holding back some and in a great way. And it really is interesting how like the stamp just kind of goes on the identity of the show or the tone of it. And it kind of was, you know, it was hard for me. I mean, I love music. I'm not a I don't know what, you know, instruments directly. I'm sure I was super annoying at the beginning just because it's trying to find, like that sort of both trust and have, you know, and trust one's own intuition about it. And you're figuring it out. And it's a new show and there's so many kind of decisions, you know, but we just hit this, you and I just felt like we hit this river and it was just going and flowing and was great throughout. And one of the problems is honestly, while our two careers are similar, like writing and composing very similar, I don't have to deal with like temp track. I don't have to deal with like that someone has, you know, that there's been a sort of semi commitment to a music prior, you know, as they're just cobbling together and they're pulling this from pulling that. And I think, and sometimes people get attached to it or don't. How do you when you're the first time, have you ever heard the temp track? Do you bother? Like, how do you contend with that?
Sometimes. I think the answer is sometimes. It depends.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, the temp track for Cursed was Yakety Sax from the Benny Hill Show.
It's interesting. That was the first half season was just that piece of music. And
we were overusing it a little bit. Yeah. But they were moving. The stories were moving you needed something upbeat.
Once it's in your consciousness, it's hard to think of anything else.
Which is why I chose the kazoo as the main instrument.
Which took me a minute. It took me a minute, but then I understood.
I fought for it. I fought. I said, we can do it. Look,
he's passionate. He's passionate.
Generally speaking, I think the temp can be useful. And it also can be, you know, what's the opposite of useful?
Imprisoning?
That. You know, it can be.
It's going to go useful. But
It can really harm because people get stuck on it. And all of a sudden it's like, well, I can't do the temp. Right. I can do what I think, and then let's try to get closer. So sometimes I listen to the temp and I'm very interested because it's a way for a filmmaker to help the composer know what the framework is. As long as I'm understanding that the filmmaker is not tied to a certain piece of music,
right.
It's just like, oh, well, we wanted something to start here. And we want it to come out here, and it sort of gets big in the middle, and it's an emotional piece of music. Like,
if
that's what we're thinking about, well, then I'll listen to the temp.
Yeah.
But if I think for a moment that the filmmaker is getting too attached, I might just not listen to the temp. I might just mute the temp track altogether and then rethink it. And I've gotten into some trouble doing that because then somebody says, weren't you listening to the temp track? I go, well, no, I wasn't, because I figured we could go in this other direction. And then sometimes I'm.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of like giving an actor a line reading.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like the equivalent to telling the person how to say the line. Right. That's right. And, you know, it's interesting, but at the same time, you know, I kind of feel like writers, they don't deal with temp tracks, but they can deal with people micromanaging them in a way that can be very similar to a temp track. Like an executive has a very specific idea how this story needs to be told, and they don't write, you know.
I need to be careful about what I say at this point in terms of, you know, but let's just say I agree with you, Jeff. You know, it happens from time to time.
From time to time. Not always. Sometimes.
Not always. Yeah.
Let's say
sometimes you get people who trust you.
Yeah. I would say a specific idea is maybe not quite as annoying as a really vague one.
Oh, that too. Like, can you make this a little more green?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, you know, like green. Like it makes me green.
Yeah, people are hearing colors.
And if they say the same word three times but louder each time, they think that does it. And
it breaks through.
That's why synesthetes should not be allowed to run shows.
I feel like we had, I'm trying to remember, do we spot music with temp?
We did. We did. You came to the studio and we spotted it with temp. But a lot of times, you know, once we got into the middle of the season, A lot of times the temp was the music that I had been writing for episodes 1, 2, 3.
Right, that's like, true. Good point. Yeah.
Using that, which was very helpful to me because then at least the thematic material was there. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, okay, we need Nimue's theme here. And right. You know what I mean? We need Arthur here. So that started to make more sense once we got farther and farther. I remember spotting that first episode going, oh, okay, I kind of need to rethink what we're doing here because this is all music that doesn't really relate to what we're, I think, originally thinking. And that didn't, right. You know, that once you heard what I was thinking, you know, yes, there was stuff to address, but the direction was the right, was, you know, we were in the same ballpark direction wise. And that's the thing that you always look for.
Yeah. 100%. And it's also interesting. You're very good at just saying like, no music here. Like, no, let's not do music here, you know, which is also unique. Like you don't just want this, which is always the note you get because it's like music at the end. That's a note that's so kind of easy to give when everything's shot and like they can't, you know, like what can we, and it ends up being like more when sometimes more is not the answer. Sometimes it's like, let's appreciate it when it's there. Right. Let's use it for that, for the, wow.
Yeah, I mean, music is only as important as the silence that precedes it. So yeah. If there's no silence, then it's just white noise.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have that argument a lot, you know, because most people are like, well, you're a composer. Don't you want to continue write music? And I'm like, well, we're both trying to tell a story here. I'm not writing my magnum opus. That's not the point of what I'm doing here, right? Like, so, you know, silence.
Unless you're paid by the note, are you? Yeah.
If I were only paid by the note, I'd be living on an island.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
If you were paid by the letter.
Yeah,
I know.
But Philip Glass would be broke.
Philip, yeah, he might be. He's got like one note.
So tell us, so we got, I mean, I look, I'm a decent Trekkie. Dave's a big Trekkie. Were you a big Star Trek guy?
Well, so yes, I didn't start as an original series Star Trek person because it wasn't my generation. Like I didn't even start to really watch it until I was already a late teenager. And by the time I was a late teenager, Next Generation was coming on the air. And once that happened, I became a huge Star Trek Next Generation fan. And from there, I went back and became a huge original series fan. I went forward after that. I never really got past Next Generation. I did get a little bit into Voyager. I didn't really get into Deep Space Nine. And then, of course, Enterprise, I never watched. And then I was hired to do the next versions of Star Trek. And you know, more importantly, I was a huge fan of the movie franchise, even sort of more than the original show, which was slightly more campy than they did. They kept the comedy, but it wasn't as campy as the original series. But musically, it was always very, very engaging to me, which is why also I was so interested in wanting to do Picard, was because of where I began my sort of Star Trek sojourn.
How do you take on you're dealing with like a legendary theme. Like what is your approach to that? Is like, I'm going to do I don't know. I'm not going to speak for you. Tell me what it's like to tackle a legendary theme.
It was daunting to say the least, you know, I was trying to stand up straight next to Jerry Goldsmith and James Horner and all these incredible composers is not an easy task, and scary for someone who, I mean, I was in a rock band, played guitar. I never took lessons. I don't really know much of that other than what I've read in books and sort of taught myself. So it was daunting, but really looking to that for inspiration was definitely helpful in terms of trying to figure out what the tone was and trying to figure out how to fashion a melody that would be sort of Star Trekian.
Yeah, I mean, Picard's beautiful. I mean, that music is beautiful,
yeah, it's
and it has this, and yeah, it's just, it's these these sort of touches where it's like, I know where I am.
Yeah.
You know, I know, I know what kind of world I'm in, but this is, it's really its own thing, which is a great testament to, that's what you want, you know, and want it to be its own thing. And
that blend of tipping your hat to the original, you know,
that, composers. That was a very important thing. And one of the things that made it a little easier on me was I knew that if at any point I wanted to grab the viewer by the neck and just pull him in, I could just play three notes.
Right.
You know, yeah. Bah, 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 and just grab him and pull him in and you're there. So it did make it easier figuring out how to sort of weave that all together. You know, that's the thing about composition. It's like trying to figure out how to take this thing, put it here and make it work with this. And
how many times did the studio say, can you just, you think like this might be a good moment for,
yeah,
like did they never had
to tell me. They never had to tell me a single time, because by the time it came to me, Alex Kurtzman, who's the sort of architect of the whole thing, and we were both very much on the same page. We'd be sitting there, I'm like, oh, you know what, maybe we could do that, and he would be saying exactly the same thing as I was. So, and then maybe it was the Voyager theme, or maybe we do you know, some other sort of nod to the past. One of the things that I really felt very close to was the main theme I wrote for Picard. I dug very, very deep into one of the Next Generation episodes, where the Next Generation episode was called The Inner Light, and it's where Jean-Luc Picard goes into like a sort of trance, is transferred to this other world, and he lives the entire life of this.
Oh, I remember that. That's a great episode.
From an old civilization, and he learns to play the flute. So I wanted to put the flute in the theme to really tip my hat to that particular episode. And then off screen, you hear his son playing a little melody. And I was like, oh, what if I just use a couple of those notes? I wonder if anybody will catch that. And the theme came out and it was like 1,000 emails came in. We're like, oh my God, you took that one little thing for them. What? I mean, literally you hear it for like 4 seconds off screen.
Wow.
And Picard says, oh, he's talking about his son and he's learning to play the flute as well. It was very fun. Like little things like that were sort of treasures for me.
Yeah, it's called sticking the landing.
Mm-hmm.
And nice.
And you can never underestimate the obsessiveness of Star Trek fans.
That's right.
You know, as an obsessive.
Yes. There's a little saying too, that nobody hates Star Trek as much as a Star Trek fan. Because if you do something, it always has to be held up against what they expect it to be, which is either Next Generation or the original series or Wrath of Khan, which is arguably the best of all the movies, you know, like all of these things. And, you know, there's a funny story actually, because the Wrath of Khan was the follow-up to the original motion picture. The original motion picture was scored by Jerry Goldsmith. The Wrath of Khan was scored by James Horner. And Goldsmith was always yelling and screaming about how James Horner sort of ripped him off for the thing. And it's like, well, did he rip him off? Or was he just sort of nodding his, you know, tipping his hat to the original person? And then the same thing, I'm working with Noah on his next project, and his next project is Alien, the show Alien. The same thing happened in Alien, where the original Alien was scored by Jerry Goldsmith, and Aliens, which was the second one, was scored by James Horner. And they had the same exact fight where Goldsmith was saying, Horner's just fucking ripping me off. And, you know, it's kind of funny.
What do you want me to do?
I hope that when they were fighting, the battle theme from the original Star Trek show played.
That's right.
Hey, look, I might be in a minority, but I think Aliens kicks Aliens' butt. I'm just saying.
Alien kicks Aliens' butt, or vice versa?
I think vice versa.
Well, if you really dig deep, I think what you'll find is Alien is one of the greatest horror movies of all time. And Aliens is one of the greatest action movies of all time because they're very different movies.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
Yeah. Alien is a haunted house movie.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So with jump scares and everything, like the whole thing. And it's just the
iconic jump scares for sure.
Iconic jump scares, not like crazy jump scares like they do today. I mean, Charlie's watching stuff. I'm like, I can't even look at the television when he's watching things.
We had Amelia go through during COVID. She had to watch every horror movie that existed, probably just to make the real world seem less horrifying. And we were like, wow, she really loves horror movies because I can barely watch. Like I'm watching Hereditary, like tearing my eyes out, you know, like anxious for days. I'm like, wow. But we kind of realized that, oh, she falls asleep like 10 minutes into these horror movies and is then just sleeping on the couch. And I'm stuck with like my eyes, like watching these terrible, terrifying movies. And she's just narcotically putting herself to sleep, you know, from shock of these horror movies. But okay. Alien, I'll accept the Aliens premise that you propose, if you will. Dave, did you have any Leonard Nimoy you needed to ask, anything you wanted to ask Jeff on the, as far as that goes?
Oh, well, not really. Well, I was just going to say that
he told me a little story before we went on.
That my Star Trek, my career has now been bracketed with Star Trek, assuming that my career is over, which I always do.
Don't we all?
We're
with you.
In 1985, I was directed by Leonard Nimoy, which I believe is the correct pronunciation. Nimoy.
Like Demi.
Yeah. And I had one line in the movie Three Men and a Baby.
Oh.
In a scene with Tom Selleck. So I had the great pleasure of having Leonard Nimoy direct me and say directly to my face, "Faster, David."
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, and That's I, you know, and I've this, and which is essentially the same direction I've gotten for the rest of my career. Faster, David. Don't milk everything. But then, and now I've just recently been on, I was a Ferengi in Lower Decks this week. That came out this week.
Nice.
Yeah. So now
this is my Star Trek moment. Just being with you guys,
and I got a nice message from LeVar on Twitter, or X. Nice. I'm sorry, X. Welcoming me to the family.
By the way, I refuse to update my Twitter app because once you update the Twitter app, it changes from the big T to the X, and I'm like, I won't do it.
Oh, I wish I thought of that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's weirdness out there. So you guys are both now just Star Trek canon. You're baked into the cake. You're there. I'll figure out some way. I'm gonna try to weasel my way in somehow someday.
I've been hanging out with the Next Generation crew tons on fan fests and, you know, Galaxy Cons and things lately. They're all lovely, lovely, wonderful people.
I've been to those, and I've now just been invited for next summer to play music in Vegas. I was like, Vegas? Okay.
Oh, maybe the big Trek convention in Vegas?
Vegas.
Roddenberry is part of that, I think, right?
I think so. I think that it's all sort of...
Who is very good friends with my friend, Jeremy Corbell, the UFO, my UFO buddy.
Yeah. There you go.
Jeremy's the man.
Synchronicities. It's happening.
I blame the aliens.
Yeah.
There are no aliens. There are UFOs.
They just don't know.
They just don't identify themselves.
No one's involved with them. They're just things.
Things in the sky.
Flying things.
Yeah. No one should worry. Everyone look the other way.
Well, look.
Nothing to see here.
This is our Halloween episode. And I reached out because we love you, Jeff, and your music is fantastic.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And you happen to have a bitch-ass ghost story that I heard at a Halloween party at my house when we were trying our best to terrify the kids, and we were throwing our best stuff out there.
You had a really great one, though, too.
I shared on the, I think episode one got the ghost stories going. Okay. I have a pretty cool one. Not as cool as the one you've got, but I was also like, I was like, Jeff didn't strike me as like a ghost guy. And I think that's kind of one of the cool parts of the story, which set the stage for us, man.
Let's start by saying that I'm not like a supernatural believer, dude. Not. With that said, I've had the experience that I had was as lucid and real as it could be. Like lucid and real. I was not terribly drunk. It was late at night, but I wasn't like half asleep. I wasn't dreaming. It wasn't like out of bed. I'm just setting the stage.
We love that. Set the stage, baby.
Well, the idea is that the people who are listening to this should know, like, I'm not like, ooh, believer in the otherworldly stuff. Like, this is something that actually happened to me and my buddy Emerson. So another way to set the stage is, so Emerson is the singer in my band Tonic, and we were making an album. We were making our second album in New Orleans, and I mean, it just so happens that in New Orleans there are no graves, as I'm sure you all know, because.
Right, because it floods, right?
Right, yeah. So you can't have anything below it. Right, so it's all crypts. It's all above ground. We were making our record in a converted old mansion. So his mansion was down in the French Quarter, initially the building was built by a man who had two daughters, and it was this big mansion, and the two daughters apparently fought over the ownership of the mansion after their father passed. That's sort of the backstory. I mean, this is obviously I think that all happened like 1880, 1870, somewhere around them.
I'm curious, can I just ask, were you by any chance being managed by Vincent Price at this point in your career?
I was not, but I have
a great place for you to record. Yeah.
You should go down. No, I can't do it. Although.
Me neither.
Let's call James Adomian. He does a good Vincent.
So we're making this record in this mansion, and you know, we have a bunch of late nights. It's a rock record. We're starting at like 3 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon. We're going until like 3 in the morning. And, you know, it's me and Emerson, our bass player, Dan, producer, engineers, like we're just up making music. And yes, we're drinking beers. We're beating po' boys. We're having smoking a lot of cigarettes, but nothing completely crazy. But one night, I don't know, we were like maybe 2/3 of the way into the record, and we had been going, you know, having normal nights. You know, everybody talks about how New Orleans is, there's a lot of ghosts and a lot of, you know, undead roaming the streets. And, you know, again, I'm not one of those people who really puts much stock into that. So every night we would just go to bed, and there was no, like, ooh, scary. But on this one particular night, we were making this, we were doing overdubs, vocal overdubs, and we kind of got tired early. So we were like, let's just call it. and we turned everything off, and all of a sudden we started hearing some things that we had never heard before. Little, you know, somebody banging into a guitar. I say something banging into a guitar, you know, like there's that sound where something bangs a guitar and it sort of vibrates all the strings and you hear it all. We're like, what was that? Did you hear that? And we were like, yeah, what was that? Like, oh, the wind or a cat or whatever it was.
Can I ask, did anybody set this house up for you at all? In other words, like, were you told, I mean, you knew about these daughters had fought for the house. Had anyone set anything up for you or no?
No. So here's the thing. Like, I didn't know about the backstory of the house until later.
Okay.
I'm setting it up.
Great. You go
sort of backwards, but we found out about the actual mansion and its backstory sort of after we were done making the record there.
Nice.
We were asking a lot of questions after what just happened, okay, after what I'm about to tell you. So we heard a little bit of noise, like then windows sort of open where we knew we had closed the windows. And Emerson and I, you know, Emerson was definitely like a guy who believes in ghosts and believes in undead and like coming back and haunting and all that stuff. So we always used to have these conversations, you know. He at the time was a Civil War buff and used to talk about like Civil War ghosts and all kinds of stuff. So he was like, well, maybe it was a ghost. And I was like, no, it's not a ghost. The wind or something is knocking into it. So you have to sort of set the stage for what this place looks like. It's one of those very traditional mansions. It's Southern mansions in New Orleans, where there's a very big entrance, like upstairs. You open right. The doors and you're in a big entry foyer. And then right in front of that foyer is a grand staircase that goes straight up. And then it splits to a balcony that comes around. And then there, you know, all of the bedrooms and stuff on the second floor are around that balcony, like on this side, on that side. And then there's another, you go around and there's another staircase that keeps going up. Oh, wow. The kitchen and the living rooms and stuff are on the first floor. If you walk around the staircase and then you go around back, that's where the living room is, the parlor and all that other stuff. So we were making the record down on the first floor behind the staircase in the parlor, in the living room, in the dining room. That's where we set up all the you know, instruments and stuff. So we were like, okay, so let's, you know, that's it. We're done for the night. We walked out of the studio, and as we were walking out of the studio and coming down, there's a hallway between like other rooms and the staircase. We heard a big, you know, crash, bang. And then we kind of got like a little like, oh fuck. What was that? What the fuck was that? Like, that sounded like bad. As we came around to the bottom of the staircase, because we were all going to go up to our rooms, as we came around to the bottom of the staircase, we all looked up and were stopped dead in our tracks. At the top of the staircase was an actual apparition of a female, all white. What you think this thing looks like is what it looked like. It was flowing, bright, glowing white gown with long white hair, like sort of floating around, and a youngish face smiling, but smiling not like the evil smile, just like a smile, like, but literally floating there. And we were frozen at the bottom of the stairs, literally frozen. I looked at Emerson and he looked back at me and we were like, do you see that? And we looked up and it was still there. And then we looked back at each other and said, I see it. Do you see it? Dan, do you see? Is everybody seeing what we're seeing? And then we looked up and then it sort of floated away and disappeared. Like I said, I'm not a big believer in the afterlife, you know, ghosts and haunting, but fuck. it was like, that was what I saw, and I cannot explain it other than to say, oh, that was a ghost. That was someone that was not on this plane, on our sort of plane of existence, because when it left, it sort of, I want to say it turned and walked away, but it didn't even do that. It sort of just floated and disappeared into nothing. And it was, I don't even know how to explain exactly how we were feeling or what we did in that moment, because then it was gone. And then we were all just standing there like, what was that? And then, wow. Then we went back to the kitchen and opened a bottle of brandy or something, tequila. I don't remember what it was. And then we started.
I find it reasonable that you stayed in the house.
Well, yeah. I mean, we had nowhere else to go. We didn't have a place to stay. There was a bar down the street called Port a Call. We were like, should we go get a drink? And we were like, no, let's just open the bottle in the kitchen. And we did. Now, here's the thing. That was it. Never to be seen again.
The rest of the recordings.
And we were there for like another 3 weeks.
Wow.
And we were all like freaked out for the next 3 weeks. But so the story was, as I started.
Before you get to the story, I got to ask you about this actual like moment, because it was preceded by a like some sort of terrible crash.
Yes.
Correct?
That's right.
Was that upstairs? Was it nearby? Was it in the basement? Where, and what did you possibly associate with the sound? Was it like a body? Was it a sound? Like, what was that sound like?
It sounded like somebody knocked something over and it hit the ground. Where it came from, none of us could pinpoint, because like, I thought it came from upstairs. Emerson was like, didn't it just come from out front? And you know, everybody was like, it came from a different place. So who knows where in the place it could have come from. And we just didn't know.
But, and about how soon after that did you see, like, what was the, how seconds, minutes?
No. I would say we heard it. And then we were sort of milling about like, what the hell was that? And we were putting stuff away, getting ready to sort of be done for the night. So it could have been like, I don't know, 8 minutes between that moment and when we walked out and around to and stood at the bottom of the stairs and saw the apparition at the top of the stairs, literally just at the very top of the stairs.
So crazy. When you first, was it like, oh, like someone else is here?
Well, at first we looked up and we didn't know what we were looking at. You know, you look up and you see something that you literally have never seen before, but is relatively familiar because it looks like it was human shaped, right? But the thing is, it was like, as I looked at it, now that I think about it, it looks exactly as you think a ghost would look like. It was the weird
Ghostbusters, man. Yeah, you know, that's fucking crazy. Part.
Like, it just looked like an apparition. That's what it looked like. You could kind of see through it, but you couldn't. And it was milky white and it was like floating.
Was there any, I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I am a lifelong atheist. So I've always been very comfortable with the idea that we don't have souls.
Me too.
When we're dead, we're done. But then I've also believed that there's something to ghost phenomena because it's been persistent throughout human history. So I've always felt like, all right, there's something to ghosts. And I'm sure there's someday we'll have an explanation for what they are. But I've always felt like, well, I think ghosts probably are real because why else would they be in the literature of pretty much every culture on Earth?
I mean, and I would say the same for aliens.
Yep. Right? True.
I'm right there with you. I've always been somewhat of an atheist. Always been somewhat of a. I'm not sure I believe anything that all these people are saying about stuff like religion and all that stuff. But there is something to be said about the fact that if life is energy and physics says that energy can't be created or destroyed, it can only change form. it would make sense. Like maybe soul is energy and energy can be seen in a way that we saw it. Because that's the thing. I saw something. Mm-hmm. I know I saw something. And
yeah,
I don't really talk about it all that much. I don't really think it's like, ooh, I saw a ghost. But like, it's a thing. I experienced seeing a thing that I perceive to be a ghost.
And like 19th century clothes? Like, I mean, we're not all, fashion experts of the...
I would say it was hard to say, but like I said, it seemed like long, white, gowny, dressy type thing. So I would say I don't remember focused details about like what the dress looked like, but it looked like flowy.
Anything on her head?
Mm-hmm.
No, long hair, just long hair. Like I remember seeing long, but it was all white. Like I said, it was all white.
Ghosts are very proud of their hair.
Yeah, apparently so.
Very, very. They take really good care of it.
All right, man. Yeah. What's the backstory? Sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh no, I was just gonna say the smiling got, because when I was a kid and living in living in a brand new bungalow in Nova Scotia for a year, I did see a ghost in that house. This is when I guess I was like 7 years old. It was 1970, 71, I think. But it was this, there was a girl appeared at my bedroom door who I thought might be my sister. She was sort of backlit from the hallway light at night. And it was the same thing. I thought, Karen, is that you? And then she drifted across the room to the foot of my bed. And it's the same thing. Smiled quite nicely. She had braids and was wearing a like puffed shouldered with a bibbed front and very pioneery, which is how every girl in 1970s was dressing.
A little house.
And then she smiled. She was that same thing, a very sort of nice smile. And then she faded out, just sort of disappeared.
So, right. What time of day was that?
The interesting
thing. Evening, nighttime, probably. Well, it was dark. So it was,
Think about this. Like, you and I have now described both very different experiences with very similar accuracy, right? Like, so you describe the thing just sort of disappearing, not really, which is how I remember the same thing happening. So
yeah,
how could that not be something, right? Like,
yes. How many damn ghosts are there in Shakespeare? And how many, like, throughout the written history of humanity, there's ghosts all the way through from every corner of the world. And so I think it's unlikely that it's all just made up and that there's nothing to spur these stories and there's nothing behind it.
I agree.
And I think maybe we don't have souls, but maybe there is some consciousness that continues. Maybe there is a persistence of consciousness that can go on outside of our bodies once we're done,
I mean, I've seen it, so yeah. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. And there's definitely a lot of overlap between the realms of UFOs and hauntings and ghosts. And
well, certainly there's been so much talk of alien and there's in for a long, long time. So it seems sort of reasonable to believe that people have seen aliens or UFOs.
Yeah.
This world's getting weird. Let's be honest. It's all starting to get weird. I need to know this backstory.
This mansion.
Yeah, what happened with this fucking mansion?
So what ended up happening was it's very interesting. The two sisters fought about the mansion. And in the end, the only way they could figure it out was to split the mansion up the middle. And there was a line up the middle of the staircase that split the house left and right. And one daughter stayed on one side, the other daughter stayed on the other. Now, up until like whoever owned the mansion after they were all gone, there was a banister that went up the center of the staircase, this grand staircase that actually split left, right. And it went all the way to the doors. The doors were actually split. There was a left door and a right door, and you could open one or the other and they would close. The owners, after they were gone, sort of took that all away. Apparently, one daughter killed the other one. So, and then the other daughter lived in the whole house, but only ever went on her side.
God, they sound great. They sound like really, really great people. Yeah. Like lovely.
That's the story that I heard from the owners of the mansion.
Did they know how she died? How did they? She killed her?
It was unclear. It was unclear. But that was the story. Was she killed her so she could own? So she could have the whole mansion.
I find it interesting that the attachment to that house is such a part of that story. Like, that house seemed to get loaded with energy and arguing and who knows, you know, like, just felt like that space got sticky, right? With just with energy and death and wanting and anger and envy, which maybe is why some of these things sort of, you know, drift around still or just get stuck, you know. That's crazy town.
Yep. Crazy town.
Well done. Good for you. Yep. Good for you for seeing a full bodied apparition. You know what you've done? You have made me watching 20 years of Ghost Hunters worth it. Watching people sit and wander in the dark and go, did you hear that? That has now, I'm like, fucking Jeff saw a full body opera. So someday these guys maybe they'll just be like, holy shit. I've been waiting for that forever, watching these guys. And I didn't know about your little house on the prairie ghost, Dave. This was that you pulled that out of your bonnet. Yeah, where did that fucking come from?
Well, your haunting was so much better than mine. I didn't want to bring it up.
That haunting, we're having a haunting competition.
Yeah. You know, that's pretty good. And I got the UFO thing. I saw a UFO, so
that's true.
That's my turf.
You do have that. You do have that on me.
Yeah.
That's a cool one, man. And so, okay. No nightmares.
You've never been touched by anything else paranormal since then?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
No, never, nothing paranormal since then. That was my one and only experience, which again also sort of makes me believe it even more, right? Like, because that has stuck, it really has stuck with me.
Yeah. Has anyone tried to explain it to you? And like, I'm giving you a rational, like, well, you know what you probably saw.
It's funny that you should say that. I don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question is no, because I've never really told it to someone that would be like, well, you know, like you probably saw the light reflecting off of the blah, 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 blah. You know, because I'd be like, no, dude, you weren't there.
Yeah. But then again, it's kind of weird that you don't talk about it. I mean, I know why, you know, but I'm saying it's a weird thing culturally that, because it's the sort of thing you think if there's no stigma that you'd want to tell everybody.
But I think that maybe there is a bit of a stigma, right? Like
there is, yeah.
Yeah. I've told my close friends, I've told this one podcast that I know of called Really. And
it's out now.
It's out.
The story's out now.
And I've talked about it on a number of occasions with the singer in my band and the bass player in my band, because we were the ones who saw it. So, you know, yeah, I kind of like that. It's just mine, you know,
It's just one of the, like it, because it follows no rules, because it's so unpredictable, because just like aliens, just like trying, you want to see something, you don't see something, you try hard to see something, you can't see something, you try to like make, you know, go to a scary place. I want to see. And it's just, it's so doing its own thing that you kind of have to put it in a sort of brain pocket and move on. Like, what are you going to do? I mean, I guess you could become a ghost hunter. You know, I would support you as a friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd be into that. I'd want to go, but I think the fact that you are you is what makes the story so compelling. Cause it's just, I was like, what? I just remember hearing the story and go, God damn, that's wow. Jeff, cause you are not someone who, you know, which is why we want you on the pod. Like, I think it's people we trust, people we, you know are like, this is not, you know, you're not going to like, oh, well, let me concoct some insane. It's just not that, that I, something happened to you. We don't know what it is. We don't know what it, but,
and it hasn't made you reevaluate like your whole existence.
No,
the nature of human life.
It has not. I've sort of, and I was, by the way, it was 19, when was it? 1990. We were there in 1998. So like early, it was like maybe February, 1998, March, maybe later. I don't remember. Sometime around 19, like spring, early summer of 1998. So I was young. I was 29.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah. And it's before reality rebooted at the millennium.
Oh, right. When with Y2K and everything shut down and the Matrix turned off and then they turned it back on. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I can only guess what the original me was like before 2000.
Oh, that explains a lot. Yeah. That explains a lot. Did you have any like emotional experience seeing it in that you, like Dave talked about when he and Jeremy saw this object in the sky, that there was a kind of lack of emotion. I mean, did you feel anything coming from it?
No.
Okay.
No. It again, it just felt like it was just there.
Yeah, it wasn't threatening or anything.
No. Didn't look threatening, feel threatening. It literally looked like, what it actually looked like is if you were looking through a window and the person that you were looking at did not know you were seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It could have been that like whatever we were seeing did not know we were seeing it. If if that thing could know, like if it had the ability to know anything, like it didn't feel like it was even aware that we were there.
You know what? You just perfectly described what it was like working with J-Lo.
She didn't know you were there.
No, I didn't. No, she could look right through me. It was amazing.
Oh, that's funny.
That's not surprising to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what it is, you know? All right. Well, I'm obligated to tell a ghost story, to wrap up, our Halloween episode, because, this was my mom, for some reason, liked to terrify my brother and I with, you know, she seemed to keep running into people who had sort of like crazy ghost experiences. So sort of in honor of her memory, I'll tell this for that. Cause this is the one that scared the shit out of me as a kid. Sort of prior and during the ones we had at the schoolhouse, which are the ones I sort of experienced. So take this with the grain of salt it is, but it was, we had like a 3 miles from where we grew up in Chester Springs, Pennsylvania, which was very farm, very woodsy, very, cornfields. And
it's a town that clearly Ray Bradbury made up.
Yeah. It's like cults and, you know, children of the corn type of thing. So there was a house that we knew about that was supposedly investigated by parapsychologists. And it was funny you talked about the divided house, because this was like there was a new section and an old section. And I'm trying to figure out how my mom knew this person. She had at one point, my mom was a singing waitress at a club nearby in Pennsylvania. She had met this woman who I guess had gotten this house from her family. So she was a young woman living in this house that half of it was haunted. The old section of this house was haunted. And she had told my mom these stories. For instance, you know, when she played Jesus Christ Superstar, the pipes would bang in the basement. When anyone stayed in the old wing, she had family that one morning she woke up with the sheet pulled over her head, something holding the sheet over her head. There was a sound apparently that when there was something in the room would go, and was one of the reasons I was kind of asking you about sound, Jet, was like a sort of like vibrating kind of sound that it's interesting that sometimes accompanies abductions too. Some of the abduction stories we've heard, like there's this sort of suboral sort of hum. Did you hear that? Did you hear anything like that, Jeff, in your thing?
I heard there was no sound at all. I mean, the sound of the house and stuff, but no sound emanating from anywhere in particular.
So this woman started to write she had been warned, I don't know, through seances, not to talk about this ghost or whatever it was. No explanation for what it was. She had started to write a book about it and developed apparently like a brain tumor that she believed and was sort of told through seances was that this was the ghost's punishment for writing. Like this was a fairly hostile energy. And I remember my mom actually had my older brother. She had to pick something up at this house with this woman. So my older brother was in this house at like maybe 9 years old and had run to play in a game room and was playing a pinball machine. And this woman was telling my mother about the sounds and Jesus Christ Superstar and the pipes and this, that, and the sheet. And my mom's like, Jesus Christ. And my brother come back and he was saying like, mommy, like, there's a sound in the pin, you know, in the playroom, and it's a and he started to describe the humming sound. She's like, oh god, let's get, you know, like nice to see you, we're gonna go. So she took off. And but the story of that place that, you know, left me sort of freaked out was that there was a bus stop at the end of the driveway. It was a big, you know, big gravel drive, and there's sort of big, two big connected houses, and the little girls, there were two kids at the end of the driveway that would get their bus there. And one morning they hear a dog barking. They turn and go, and the front door of the old part of the house was open. And they looked in the house and saw a dog barking at something on the upstairs. I guess it was a sort of kind of setup of barking at something upstairs, and they heard a scratching above them, and they looked up, and there was a bloody face staring down at them from the top window of the old wing of the house. And that kept me, my young 4 or 5 year old self, going for a while. But there you go. No, I didn't see the bloody face. It's just in my brain forever, with mm-hmm. your apparition and with Dave's little house on the prairie, sister doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, my Amelia, and I just bring this up because we were just talking about it last night, 6-7 months ago, she, and this is totally separate, I don't even know what to make of this, but she came home super freaked out, had been hanging out with friends, and kind of came through the door with her other friend, like super, super freaked out. And was like, we saw someone at, they saw me at the, in front of our gate at, and this was probably like 12:30 at night. She's like, it was you, like standing by the mailbox or whatever. Like it was a description. I don't know. I was thinking of like, I was trying to figure out what it was. I was not outside. I was inside, and this had happened maybe 2 minutes before she got home. They were pulling up to our house and they saw me standing outside of the house, and then she saw it, and her friend saw it. She saw it, and her friend saw it, and they turned, and that was, and was gone. They believed it was me. I was, and I don't know, I was in my jammies or my pajamas and a t-shirt or something, and but I wasn't me. But I was reminded of the what was it, the Stephen King story, The Outsider, the doppelgangers or something. I was like, what the fuck was that? Like, did you, I mean, maybe they, anyway, I thought that was kind of creepy. I was like, what's that all about? Mm-hmm. I can't blame the podcast because we hadn't been doing it yet, but I do think there's, we've talked a lot about the hitchhiker effect. You pick up weird shit when you start, you know, kind of overly dealing with this stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's like we were, Tom, when we did the Good Trouble podcast, Tom Ford said that, you know, once you engage in these weird things, sometimes it just pops into your life. Weird things start happening. So maybe now that you've been on the podcast, you'll get some more hauntings.
You're welcome, Jeff. You're welcome.
Tom!
Nina's going to be very disappointed. She'll be very pissed off. This is our Halloween episode. This was good fun. We're really, really grateful you came on to chat some scary shit and some cool music stuff and everything. We would love to have you back at some point. You got to, you know, you don't even have to see crazy shit. We can just keep talking.
I got nothing else. That's it.
Well, you know, not yet. Could be a hitchhiker. You know, stay alert. Stay alert, Jeff.
And I've seen the first three episodes of Fargo.
There you go.
And so far I love what you've done.
Loved what you've done.
Well, thank you. I was going to say, and I can tolerate what I've done.
So I'm looking, I can't really wait.
Excited to see the rest of the season.
Just yeah, check out Fargo. What else we got? We got Picard. You got everything. You've got
How many Star Trek shows have you done?
Well, I did. I just finished the last episode of the last season of Star Trek Discovery. So we did five seasons of that. Wow. I did two seasons of Star Trek Picard. I actually didn't work on the third season of Star Trek Picard because I was working on Kurtzman's other project, The Man Who Fell to Earth, and I couldn't.
Oh, you did Man Who Fell to Earth. I was watching that. Yeah.
I did that, which was one of my favorite things to do. It was such a good telling of that story.
And I'm excited to see Alien, even though I wanted to be on that. That would have been so cool.
They haven't shot it yet. You still have a chance. Call them.
I thought they'd already shot it all.
No, they stopped. Like there was the strike, and then they stopped everything because the strike.
Yeah. I know David Risdahl from this season of Fargo. He had a part in there. I know he was heading down to Indonesia for that.
Yep.
So I thought maybe they skirted the strike by being in Indonesia.
I think that they thought they were going to, but there was a mix of equity actors from London and SAG actors from here. And
yeah. Oh, where were they? They were in Thailand, right?
They're in Thailand.
They're in Thailand.
The SAG actors were like, nope, we're not going.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay.
Yeah, but that's going to be good. Well, hopefully he's had time, to realize that that the show needs me.
I'll mention it.
Sure. That's what's happened.
Yeah.
It would have been great with Dave. No.
That's what happened. It was a lucky break for them. The strike happened. Yep. They had a chance to reassess.
Still there. Yeah. And for any, Jeff Russo deep cuts, there's always Cursed on Netflix. Still playing, guys. Come on now.
It's a great show.
Keep hope alive. Mm-hmm. I know. I love
it was
that.
So
I
much
love
fun.
That show.
So
loved our, much. I loved our work on that. It was a good time. But we'll get the next one.
Let's do it.
I'm gonna get in the lineup. All right, buddy. You are a hero. Thank you for doing this. This was super cool. Hopefully, we scared some people and they learned some stuff about composing. And that's here for today. And we did it before either Dave or I had to run and pee.
Yeah,
so that's always a record.
Yes, and great to see you in a place that isn't frozen.
Yes, really good to see you too. And Tom, it's always great. Haven't seen you in a while, so
good to see you, pal.
All right,
out of your parka. All right, catch you later, everybody. Thanks so much, Jeff Russo. Everyone,
bye.
Good night.